This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run on what looks to be a beautiful Wednesday morning. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning. In about half an hour, we have the Breakfast Grill. Xiaoning, why don't you tell us who is in the hot seat today?
Well, it is Thorsten Beck. He's a professor of financial stability at the Florence School of Banking and Finance, part of the European University Institute. Now, why am I talking to him? It's really just all about the mini banking crisis that we are seeing, right? Because we saw the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, and then that was followed by two other regional banks in the US in a very short space of time. So not long after that, we also then saw the demise of Credit Suisse, 167 years of legacy, up in smoke in a matter of days, being forced sale to UBS. Now, I'm going to sit down with him and ask him, why did this happen? Was it a surprise? Are the regulators doing enough? And are we going to see a repeat of the 2008 financial crisis?
Who better to ask than a professor of financial stability? Stay tuned to that conversation after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. We are turning our attention now to developments in our own backyard. Monday marked the 78th anniversary of Armed Forces Day in Myanmar, which commemorates the army's resistance to the Japanese occupation in 1945. Ironically, this is being observed amid an ongoing civil resistance against the military junta. The military held a parade of its latest weapons, and the junta chief general Min Aung Hlaing made a rare speech pledging to deal decisively with what he described as acts of terror by armed resistance groups.
So he added that countries which had condemned his coup were wrong and should actually join the military in shaping its own form of democracy. And speaking of democracy, the military chief also promised that elections will be held eventually and the power will be handed over to the winning party. But yesterday, the military government dissolved over 40 political parties, including the National League for Democracy, held by Aung San Suu Kyi, after it failed to register as a political entity for upcoming elections. So what is the junta's version of democracy, and what does this latest declaration mean for the opposition and political prisoners in Myanmar?
For some thoughts on this, we speak to Hunter Marston, researcher with the Australian National University. Hunter, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. So we did see General Min Aung Hlaing deliver a rare speech on Armed Forces Day amid the pageantry of a military parade. What do you think were the key messages that the junta is trying to convey?
Well, the junta has made clear that it will only hold elections once its state of emergency is over, when it has rolled out stability on its own terms, which involves crushing resistance and engineering the elections to suit its preferred victor, the USDP party. Min Aung Hlaing has also emphasized a change in the electoral system from one of first past the post to one of proportional representation, which should actually advantage the military's preferred USDP party and perhaps change the ethnic composition of parliament by favoring some larger ethnic groups and actually subverting others.
Okay. Does this mean that we're going to see an escalation of violence? Because you did say, right, that the military was going to crush any resistance, and we are seeing that along, especially along its borders.
Right. And actually, in recent weeks, it appears that the military junta has shifted its strategic focus to more of central Myanmar, in perhaps some deference to China's efforts to promote stability on its border in Myanmar's north. China has very closely engaged with a new special envoy, liaising with several large ethnic armed groups in Myanmar's north. So it seems like China has put some pressure on both those ethnic armed groups as well as the Myanmar military to avoid further instability in the country's north. And therefore, it appears that the military junta has acquiesced to this and shifted its strategic focus to fighting combatant groups in the country's central dry zone.
Hunter, I'm curious why the military junta continues to co-opt the language of democracy despite, arguably lacking the credibility to actually hold free and fair elections. Who are they trying to convince, actually?
That's a good point. Largely, they're convincing very little of the domestic constituents, but this reflects the military's long-term quest to prove itself to be the guarantor of stability and Myanmar's national sovereignty and territorial integrity. The military put in place a very carefully roadmapped transition process back in 2008 with its constitution and the 2010 elections, which were really held on the military's own terms. So it's seeking to follow through on this decades-long process of ensuring a controlled or disciplined flourishing democracy, as the military likes to call it, which involves the relative lack of free and fair participation from any political parties such as the NLD and the acquiescence of various ethnic political parties to the military's electoral system.
And at the end of the day, when can the elections be held? Because, like you said earlier on, only when the state of emergency has ended. And that's, of course, a big question mark, right?
Right. Well, the military did extend the state of emergency for 6 months, and this will be the last time it can do so, constitutionally speaking, although the military has made clear they may appeal to certain constitutional clauses which allow for unusual circumstances. So essentially, the military has already upended the constitution and continue to prolong the state of emergency indefinitely, because it's not actually holding itself accountable to rule of law. It's enforcing a rule by law at the end of the rifle.
Hunter, you mentioned earlier about China's influence on what's happening up north. I'm curious about the importance of Myanmar for China and also Russia, both who have maintained close ties with the country. What do you think the importance of Myanmar is for these two countries?
Well, for China, Myanmar has always been an important avenue to the Indian Ocean and an important land for the extraction of natural resources, which provide China with energy and electricity via hydroelectric dams and other extractive industries such as copper mining in the country's north, as well as timber and other gems which flow across the border via illicit trade to China. And essentially, China wants a country that is weakened and therefore subservient to China and will approve Chinese business interests, but not be able to unify and push off or throw off the yoke of sort of Chinese dominance of the country's economy. And Russia is essentially competing with China for influence here. It doesn't have an economic footprint or is much more minor compared to China's and other international economies. But Russia is a major provider of weaponry to the Myanmar military, and for the last two decades has provided about half of the country's overall arms imports, second only to China. So Russia maintains strategic influence with the export of weapons to the Myanmar military. And Min Aung Hlaing, the commander-in-chief, essentially looks to Moscow as a hedge against too much reliance on China, which the military has long been wary of falling into a relationship of dependency with.
Meanwhile, Hunter, I mean, there were hopes that ASEAN, under the chairmanship of Indonesia, could actually make some headway on this Myanmar crisis. Has there really been any progress made on this front?
Well, it's hard to say definitively. Indonesia has pursued a different track here, namely by creating an office of a special envoy in Jakarta, which is different from the past two ASEAN chairs, Brunei and Cambodia, which sort of pursued a more direct approach, appointing a special envoy and hoping for access granted by the Myanmar military, which failed to materialize, and therefore their chairmanships were relatively ineffective. So Indonesia has already secured this office of special envoy, although they have not named specifically who the envoy is. So they've institutionalized the office, giving it more resources and capacity to hopefully leverage all parties involved to bring them together into dialogue and fulfill the five-point consensus, which ASEAN passed shortly after the coup in April 2021.
So all this, for the past year at least, Hunter, I think the international community has been distracted by the ongoing war in Ukraine. Are there any indications that there is more attention coming back to Myanmar? Do we know if international actors are planning to take more action or perhaps have more engagement with the opposition government in exile?
Well, the United States has been very consistent in its own point in pressuring or urging other countries to engage with the National Unity Government, and the NUG has set up offices in various countries around the world, including in Washington. So there is some high-level government-to-government engagement there, but whether that will lead to any real change on the ground is very unclear at this point, and it appears that foreign governments are extremely reluctant to lend any material support to the National Unity Government for fear of being viewed as supporting the country's various civil wars, primarily in by avoiding lending material support to the People's Defense Forces in the country fighting against the military.
Mm. Hunter, thank you very much for speaking to us. That was Hunter Marsden, researcher at the Australian National University, giving us an update on what's going on in Myanmar, especially this week where we had the Armed Forces Day parade and also the recent pronouncements by General Min Aung Hlaing. Elections could be in the offing, but really what kind of elections will they be?
Especially since, what, 40 parties aren't participating? And I mean,
especially the very influential NLD, which is led by Aung San Suu Kyi, who is in prison at the moment.
Now, in the meantime, you've got this backdrop, right, of Myanmar being in apparently dire economic distress. So apparently shortages of food, fuel and other basic supplies happen. So it's not a good state. And in the meantime, I'm wondering what role ASEAN is playing. I mean, when the crisis started 2 years ago, it seemed that ASEAN would take a greater role in resolving. But so far, not much has happened on that front at all.
7:47 a.m. We are heading into some messages, but when we come back, we'll discuss the political fallout from the Prime Minister's visit to Saudi Arabia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.